Right now, though, on the phone with us with a soggy trails report, Charlie from Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and I guess welcome to summer 2019, right?
Yeah.
We are starting off a little bit, it's going to be a little bit muddy out there, and, you know, I think so far we've had a super advantageous spring. I mean, considering the amount of snow we had this year, the fact that we actually have some relatively dry trails and have had some really good riding is something we can all be thankful for. It is going to be, everything's going to be wet this weekend, so there's probably have to come up with a better plan for if you were thinking about riding. Normally, we can send you down south or send you down the Draper or something, but I think everyone's going to be super soaked, so that's not going to be happening. Just want to say, you know, we could mention maybe National Trails Day. It'll be June 1st. We don't know where the project is, but we know we have an exciting project coming for that. And otherwise, I think get out there, have fun, and try to stay out of the mud and keep your bike clean. And basically enjoy the weekend.
Okay, well, don't go yet. So what kind of turnout did you guys get with the bike to school and work day?
It was looking really good. I mean, the sun came out down here. It was spectacular. You know, it's kind of that beautiful May day where you see traces of snow on the hillsides over the ski areas and cloud cover, but the sun was out and lots of kids came in on various escorted rides, and yeah, I would say super exciting, and always it was great to see the Park City's just local community support non-motorized recreation and come out here and ride and do the right thing, and certainly the parents and getting their kids on their bikes is super cool.
Okay, it's snowing here in Old Town. But,
yeah, we can see that. I know Andy's about ready to ride up there, and yeah, it looks a little rough up in Old Town.
Okay, want to talk briefly about your council appearance yesterday. Basically, Mountain Trails and Summit Land Conservancy asking the city council for what exactly? The donation of property at Quinns Junction, a lease of property at Quinns Junction?
No, we're not looking for a donation, number one, to be very clear, and I even started with that last night. What we're looking for is basically how we can make a win-win situation so that really in the future here, as we probably, you know, as Club Med closes down, or the old medical center where a number of us are, including Summit Lands, is that we're not thinking, you know, $100,000 a year in the rent. That money would be just sidetracked from trail and open space work. So we're really just trying to see if we can't figure out how we can have a home, be efficient, and continue to do the job going forward. One of the things I think is worth pointing out is Summit Lands and Mountain Trails is looking at funding the building ourselves. So, which probably, you know, be something we are doing fundraising drive over. But on the other hand, if we establish a good safe home for a base of operations, we'll all be a lot happier and healthier. And trail work will continue on into the future for quite a while.
So the idea is that you build your own building and pay the city a property lease. Is that the idea here?
You know what? That discussion hasn't been had, but the city council last night did leave the door open to go to have those discussions, and that's what we'll be doing going into the future here.
Okay.
So the where and the how much and all those are totally undecided. And feel really grateful that City Council did basically, you know, recommend that we investigate this further. So lots of options out there, and I think there's a lot of win-win possibilities. So we're just going to have to sort through those in the next bit.
Well, I'll also have Andy later on, the Mayor Andy Bierman, but let me have you address just the issues of equity here. Of course, we've got the Kimball Arts Center and Sundance Institute building their own buildings on property that they will have to pay for at the Arts and Culture District. KPCW, of course, had to build and pay for its services here. So why should you guys be any different?
It's a tight. That's a good question. Well, we're not trying to be that different, number one. First off, I mean, if we're funding the building in total, that's, I think, pretty reasonable. I mean, a couple of things we've looked at are basically the last night's proposition was, our first site choice was some land that's out in Quinns that is basically considered recreational open space land. And it has very limited it has very limited restrictions on it, so that not just any kind of building can be put there. So that would be one of the things we'd look at. But like I said, we're not looking for a freebie. We're looking for a win-win. And I think we are going to be able to take time and investigate that in the next few months and whatnot. But we really need to get, you know, kind of in the weeds more than we are. This last night's discussion opened the door to have those discussions and through it.
Former Mayor Jack Thomas, of course, working with you, it sounds like. So has he already come up with some drawings? It sounds like you're looking even at a two-story building.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what, it, you know, if you're going to have, if land's going to be scarce and valuable, there's no sense building a one-story building. So if we're going to build a 2,800 square feet or 3,000 square foot building, you might also put a second floor on so that you can actually house some other, you know, like for us, because Summit Lands would be building this building with us, it would be a great place to house their operation as well. And their operation certainly is appropriate in terms of they manage the open space that we actually put trails on. So, you know, it's a pretty good match. And pardon me, it's a good match. And we'd like to just see if we can't push it forward instead of just sinking, like I said, sinking just an incredible amount of money into rent that should have gone into maybe trails and open space.
Okay, Charlie, we'll talk about it more. Thanks for your time this morning.
You bet. Thanks.
Charlie Sturgis is the executive director of the Mountain Trails Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, Bright Futures is a comprehensive multi-year program to teach first-generation kids about college, to equip them with the schools that they need to get to and through college. In the studio, leading that program, I have the coordinator of Bright Futures, Rebecca Gonzalez, and she is joined by, I'm guessing, with a couple of the students who are participating in this, Jenny Celestrino and Isaac Cortez. Is that close?
Yes.
Okay,
it is.
I need you guys up close to those microphones. But, Rebecca, let's just start with you and talk a little bit about that. This is a program of what? Park City High School, the Community Foundation?
It's a program of the Park City Education Foundation. So we're housed under their umbrella, and we're one of their high-impact programs that they've supported since the beginning. They helped us launch the program 3 years ago, and these are our first seniors who will be graduating this year and off to college. And what makes our program so unique is we'll not only support them in high school, but we'll follow them all the way until college completion. So our goal is for these students to graduate between the 4 years of college and come back and, you know, keep helping mentor other students who are going through the program and looking up to them as their first class.
Okay. So all of the funding then for the program comes from the Ed Foundation?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're excited. We're doing Running with Ed this weekend. So that'll be really exciting, even though it might be raining.
Yeah. So the program started, what, then 3 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
For 10th grade for these two here?
Yep. They started our first class, and now we're recruiting our incoming new class. So as these students are transitioning to the college level, we're going to be welcoming our next class from Treasure Mountain to the Bright Futures program. So we'll have four classes up and running with one college team.
Great. So you've got how many in that first class?
In this first class, we accepted 15 students to enter into the college programming. So there's an evaluation process where students have to meet certain criteria and engagement in the program, and 15 of them will continue into the college programming with us. And we have students ranging between 25 to 30 students per class in high school. So it's a lot of students that are, you know, that we're tracking as first-generation college students and mentoring them along the way.
Okay, so for these 15 students then, all 15?
All of them have been accepted to college and will be attending. And Isaac's, do you want to say where you're going to go this fall?
Oh, yeah. I'll be heading off to Westminster College in the fall.
Okay, and how about for you, Jenny?
I'll be heading to Utah State University in the fall.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about getting into college is one thing, paying for it is another. So how are you managing that?
I had direct financial aid from the college. They gave me a generous scholarship. And so my funding is coming from them and then from the Park City Community Scholarships and some Bright Future Scholarship. And I will be working in the summer as well to pay off the remaining chunk.
So you're going to accept some student loans then? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to accept a loan.
Yeah, and what are you interested in doing?
I'm looking into their communications program, and I was going to look into minoring in film and into business also.
Yeah, and then how about for you, Jenny? How are you going to be paying for college?
I got a need-based scholarship from the university I'm going to and the community scholarship from Park City High and a Bright Future scholarship, and I will also be working in the summer to get them. Yeah, like some money saved up, yeah.
And what are you going to be studying?
I plan to study international business at Utah State.
Okay. I guess your parents are pretty proud of you, huh?
Yeah, I'm the oldest in my family, so I'll be the first one to go off to college, the first one to graduate high school.
Oh, even high school?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you too?
Yeah. Well, I have two older brothers.
Okay.
But I will also be the first to graduate high school.
Ah, okay. And then your brothers, are they in college or...?
No, they are not.
Yeah. Okay. Well, congratulations. That's a big deal. Talk to me a little bit about how you think that this program helped that happen.
Well, I would like to say that it's definitely helped me keep on track with my schooling, like helping me watch my grades and see the importance of education, like after high school, because I'm not just trying to live my life paycheck to paycheck. And I just think it's important to... get the education, and Bright Futures has helped me with that, and it's also helped me with like networking skills too.
Yeah. Okay, and then for you, Jenny, I mean, how did this program make this a reality for you going to college?
Well, like since I'm a first generation, I feel like I never really had the support like to fill out even financial aid forms and like college applications, and they really helped me with that, along with like networking and knowing that I can get to college and like be whatever I want, because I want to be able to have that financial security like I don't have right now, like in the future.
Again, how is it that they got chosen?
They had to go through an application process, so every student from Treasure Mountain who's interested in joining Bright Futures goes through a summer academy. So they had to do a 250 word essay and meet a minimum of 2.5 GPA or higher. And when we review the applications, and all they have to tell us is why they want to go to college, why do you want to get to and through college. So they definitely inspired me, and all of their challenges they've had against them to go to college, they're now beating the odds. They're really are shining stars in the program, and they're sharing their powerful message that you can do it too. You can become a role model in the community. You can go to college. You can graduate. You can apply for FAFSA. You can get all the financial need. You can take advantage of the opportunities here in Park City and thrive. We all have the opportunity to do so, and these students are taking full support from the community. So I'm so thankful that with Bright Futures we've been able to highlight the need as well, that we have a large immigrant population here in Park City, and these students come from families who work here and who support this community, and we have to support them too to go to college. So I'm really happy that they're going to be the role models within their own family and within the Park City School District. And other people, they're like, how are you making this possible? And it's like, it takes a village. I wouldn't be able to do this without the support of the Park City High School. They support us in making sure the students are enrolled in high rigorous classes, AP, taking advantage of all these opportunities. Jenny went on to study abroad, and she had the amazing support of the whole school, and Isaac as well, which is amazing. So they're taking really risks. They're taking high risks, but they're also knowing that we're there to make sure that they're successful and that they have safety nets. And so with the college process, it's been really eye-opening to just see how much the universities want to support these students as well, because they know that they're coming from a very high top high school in the state of Utah, and that they know that these students want an opportunity and that they will do whatever it takes to provide them financial aid, even first generation programs there to support them, and we'll be there checking in as well with their families. So
Yeah. So how do you meet with the kids during these last 3 years? Is it one-on-one, or do you come together as a group? Or?
Yep. We come together once a month, and we do leadership academies, and we also do cultural events in town. And we're always making sure that, you know, they come and check in. Checking in is super important for these students, letting them know that, hey, this is an opportunity. Take advantage of it. Come and just learn. And so they're learning the soft skills, and they're also learning how to navigate in a higher education system that it's so foreign to their entire family.
Right. And so are you at the point where you have more kids that want to be part of this than you have space for?
No, we're still, you know, building our reputation, and every year we increase the classes. And we're very lucky that with more years in the program, there's more awareness in the community. So students are more, even generation-wise, like their cousins or their siblings, younger siblings, want to join Bright Futures from a very young age. And it's already kind of like we're setting that expectation. Hey, you're going to have this program. It's okay if you're a first-generation student. You can go to college as well.
Okay. So you've got a college retreat coming up. Tell me about that.
Yes, we have a college retreat next week on the 21st, on Tuesday, and then on Thursday, the 23rd. And we're excited because these students will be doing a retreat with the whole staff and volunteers, where they're going to have workshops about ways to navigate higher education in terms of where to go, the resources, the books, applying for certain things during the summer that, you know, a lot of families here in Park City are fortunate to know, but these students, they're going to be in the limbo. And so we want to make sure that we create safety nets, and that they know, hey, you need to support each other. They're going to build college crews. And in these college crews, you know, Isaac's going to go to Westminster. So he's going to have his college crew, where other students who are also going to Westminster are going to tag team together and solve, you know, challenges together that they may face, and as well with Utah State. So we'll have Jenny setting up her college crew as well, and meeting, you know, other people who want to help them and who want to inspire them to just continue to push through.
Okay. And you've also got a family celebration dinner happening?
Yes, we have. So we're inviting the parents on Thursday, and we're really excited because parents are going to have a conversation with other parents who've been in the college process as well with their children. And they're going to be sharing experiences. So they're going to ask them, how are you able to navigate the college process with your child? What were some of the obstacles that you faced, and how did you overcome them, seeing your child move out and go to live on campus? How are you able to visit your child away from home? So all of these conversations that are intimidating to our parents, we're going to discuss, and the students are going to explain, here's my financial aid package, mom and dad, you know, I'm set to go, or I need a little support from you in this area. So it's just also healthy communications within the family. We really want to encourage these students to feel, hey, although you're going to go to college, you can have a healthy conversation with your parents and reach out to them and reach out to Bright Futures when you need the support.
Okay. Well, again, congratulations, Jenny and Isaac. And that's quite the accomplishment. And good luck in college.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Well, the Park City Council discussed the budget, historic district guidelines, and finding a new home for two nonprofit organizations. In the studio now with a recap, Park City Mayor Andy Bierman. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you just arrived from the Bike to School and Work event. What kind of turnout did we have in this?
Surprisingly good turnout. When I left, there were probably 80 kids or more that were out there enjoying breakfast. And despite the bad weather, we did get a little window there. The sun came out long enough to bike everybody to school and get them fed.
Okay.
Biking home might be another matter.
Yeah, we're not sugar, right? We won't melt.
No.
Did you see anything out there that you're like, oh, we could make some improvements here to make it easier for people to bike and or walk to school and work?
Oh, I think there's a lot of improvements. We've been focused on improving walkability and bikeability for over a decade, and there's still some big gaps, particularly in the center of town near Bonanza Park. We've got some plans to make connections there. We're putting in the new tunnel to access the high school, and I think that'll be helpful. We're always looking for additional ways to improve things, and you know, certainly in there are areas where we need to cut through curbs and put ramps in, put in more safety zones. I don't know if you've seen on Prospector where we just put in the new Charros down the street. I think those are going to be an improvement, and I hope we see those all over town someday.
Yeah. Let's see. You had mentioned that you had attended an event where you had heard from members of the Latino community about unfair housing practices. Can you talk about their concerns?
Yeah. You know, I'd say a lot of them were general concerns, but there are ones, unfortunately, I've heard before. And a lot of it just has to do with they feel like they're being abused by landlords. They're taking advantage of language barriers. They're not giving back deposits. They're not giving them sufficient parking spaces. They're charging them for things like water, saying they're monitoring it when that isn't really true when they're on general meters. And this is something I had quite a few Latino employees work for me over the years, and Thea and I often would intervene on their behalf to help them get security deposits and such back. And you hate to hear stuff like that, but I think there's a degree of predatory behavior in town among some property managers.
Is it fair to say that it's the in private homes that this is happening, that are being rented out, or is it in some of the larger apartment complexes?
The cases
complexes?
We were hearing about were in larger apartment complexes, and there is some leverage on those. Some of those get federal tax credits, which means they have to follow very specific rules. So we did get some specifics, and we do plan to follow up and put the right people in touch with them. And there's also been some where I think the health department's been activated.
Yeah. Is that the city's responsibility? I mean, is it something that the city attorney would prosecute on?
Well, we actually, most of the properties we were talking about were out in the county, but we did have Lieutenant Latham there, or excuse me, Lieutenant Wright there, who represents the sheriff's department, and we wanted him there so he could hear it, and he had some good advice. So the city and the county work pretty well together on housing issues.
And you had also said that you spoke with Diego Zagara, the mm-hmm. Park City Community Foundation Social Equity Director, about what could be done to address some of these concerns. Do we talk about changing policies somehow, or?
I think there are a lot of ways we'd approach it, and some of it might be changing policy. Some of it might just be making resource available to some of our underrepresented citizens that need help with translation, they need help with legal services, they need the ability to push back on this. And there's been a lot of talk about maybe having a centralized location where we can provide some of these services and having people to do that, whether they're volunteers, whether they're hired positions, whether it's a nonprofit. I think Diego and myself are in agreement that that's something that we ought to make part of the social equity discussion.
All right. Let's see. The Summit Land Conservancy and Mountain Trails Foundation presented their request to use space at the Quinns Junction Sports Complex. They're looking to build permanent offices for both of them. We're talking about space next to what is already a maintenance building out there, mm-hmm. kind of kitty corner from
right at what they call the Quinns Trailhead, and it's where most people start skiing if you want to ski the Oscathorpe parcel out there, and in the summertime certainly access the Round Valley trails. There's a dirt parking lot out there next to a building that are used, I believe, by parks. And Mountain Trails has had a trailer out there the last couple of winters, a temporary office, and they leave some of their equipment there for the grooming. And that's where they're interested in putting a more permanent location.
Okay. Concerns about fairness, the city giving land or leasing land to nonprofits when others like the Kimball Arts Center, Sundance, even KPCW have had to pay for it. So can you address some of those concerns?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to compare these apples to apples. For example, the land, both Kimball and Sundance will be paying for the land they're going to build their facilities on, but the city's building the parking, the plazas, the stairways and that. We're doing millions of dollars of investments, which is going to benefit them, and they'd have to do in their own facility. The Peace House was brought up, and you know that we gave them several hundred thousand dollars in fee waivers and helped with the purchase of their old facility to fund the new one. KPCW, we have kind of a unique arrangement with you here in this space that I feel there are some benefits to. And every nonprofit you look at, we've tried to help in different ways when they need it and how we can. So I don't think we can compare them all apples for apples. That being said, it is important we have a fairness discussion and we try to support all of our nonprofits in the best ways possible.
So are we talking about donating the property to these two organizations or leasing the property to them? Or have we even gotten
that far? The conversation at this point was just, do we even want to entertain it? The next step is going to be to discuss, would we sell them the property? Would we do a long-term lease? The economics of it haven't been specified yet, but council did want to move forward and have that discussion. So that'll be the next one.
And it's also, I believe, just given that it's recreation open space, I mean, can you even build an office building out there legally?
Yeah, actually, there are a lot of deed restrictions that come with that particular property when we bought it from the Gilmore Trust. One of them is we can build things there for the public good and educational uses. And what Mountain Trails and Summit Lands is talking about is not just an office, but also an educational center and maybe even a bit of a visitor center to Round Valley, where you could come in there, you could learn about the efforts that are being being done there, youth groups that come out to hike or do ecology walks could be based out of there. So we think it's something that could probably fit under that deed restriction and be appropriate for the space, but we will have to go back to the Gilmore Trust and make sure they agree with that.
All right. So at that point, it was just a work session item, and it would come back for what?
Yeah, this will come back for a full discussion, probably more than one, before anything would be approved.
Council spent a bunch of time on the second budget hearing for fiscal year 2020. Councilmember Steve Joyce again with some concerns, this time about debts and bonding. He argues that we're maxing out our credit cards, as he put it, adding a tax and then bonding against it and then immediately spending that money. But you don't agree. How come?
Steve, it was interesting. Steve's criticism was by past actions by past councils, and it was about bonds that were widely approved by the public. So what I can say about Park City is we're in a very fortunate position. We have a very strong economy. We've had a strong economy for a long time, and I feel like it's been managed very well by the city. So we are in a great position. Should there be a recession, we've got solid reserves. We have a variety of things we can cut to weather that kind of situation. And the debt we've taken on, I understand. I think it's a good exercise to question that debt, but it's debt that we could afford to do, and it's debt that we went to the public and asked them if they wanted to take that on, and they made that choice overwhelmingly. So we can look back and criticize that, but frankly, I think what the city was doing was the will of the people.
Yeah. Was he specifically talking about the transit and transportation taxes or that 1%
open He space? Specifically brought up the resort city sales tax, which was brought to voters, I think, in 2003 to go towards open space, downtown improvements, street improvements, and storm drain work. And that was approved by the voters. He was talking about our bonds. And he was also referring to our RDAs, which is tax increment. And that's money that it'd take a much longer discussion to explain where that comes from. But when you agree to do that, the whole idea is to bond against it up front.
Okay. Again, people have you had any public comment on it?
No. I would love to see some public comment on the budget. And I would love to see, it's not the most interesting thing, but it's such an important part of what we do up there. So I really encourage the public, if they ever have any concerns, to please come up to our budget hearings or reach out to our staff or our council and learn more about it.
Okay, I think there was also some concern, though, about how we have delayed some projects due to treasure and whether or not these do get put on back on the the capital improvements plan, that being like the Brew Pub Plaza. I don't know, is that what we're still calling it?
Yeah, I think there were some questions among new council members what was said to the public in terms of what guarantees were made on that. And there were no guarantees that the Brew Pub would come back. I think the council said we're going to continue to look at feasible downtown improvements. That was canceled to put the money towards treasure, but we were running into some pretty big price escalations and some environmental problems that were making the Brew Pub less realistic. And those don't go away. I think you'll still see some improvements to sidewalks, to the Miners Plaza in town here, and hopefully the Brew Pub. There's a lot of deferred maintenance up there because we thought we were going to tear it all out this year, and you'll see some improvements there.
Okay. Let's see. The Historic District Guidelines once again came before council, and you said as a homeowner who I think you're remodeling in Old Town, it's been pretty restrictive for you to follow those guidelines. So what does it mean to you for new homes to be compatible with historic neighbors?
Oh, I'm not even going to try to tackle that question. I mean, that's what we spent probably 90 minutes on that, and the HPB and the Planning Commission and Council has gone round and round for years. To me, the most important thing we get right, though, is size and scale. Certainly, you don't want new homes that are far larger than the surrounding historic homes that kind of blow up the streetscape. There's a lot of argument over materials and how much. I personally find the code kind of contradictory, and it says we no longer want to try to imitate historic homes with new construction, but then it's fairly restrictive and wants you to use materials and styles that look very much like historic homes. And those are the points that I find really aggravating as I'm going through the process. Those are the very same points I've heard for a decade from residents and neighbors that they're frustrated with. And I think we made a lot of improvements. We put a lot of work into this, but I still don't think we have the clarity and the consistency that we should for the public. And so I think council landed in a really good place. This is not something that there's an easy answer for. We would have solved it a long time ago. But we're going to put together a task force of builders, architects, Old Town residents have done these these kind of projects and see if we can come up with some ideas to continue to refine it.
Okay, so you did go ahead and approve what was before you, but we still have more work to do. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we made some minor changes, but we approved it.
Okay. And then also the request for bus shelter improvements funds for $182,000 was approved. Some concern is that this is six out of dozens, and that seemed like a lot of money for just six.
You know, there was a lot of sticker shock on this one, and I have to say pretty much anything that involves engineering or construction right now, there's a lot of sticker shock. The prices have gone up so much. But this was a little more complicated than it first appeared. We're designing for six shelters, but we're trying to come up with two common designs that can be used on all of our other shelters. And not only was it design of the shelters, but it was looking at the roadways coming into those, the sidewalks, ADA requirements, retaining walls, public art, a lot of different elements that need to be done before they can be constructed.
Okay. Anything else that you wanted to mention from the agenda?
Nothing really from last night. I did want to remind the public there's some good events coming up. There's three events that the city's doing, one being this weekend on Saturday. We're doing a defensible space discussion, defensible space and biochar. It's at 4 p.m. out of Quinns Junction near the NAC. On Monday, we are holding an open house for residents on the Woodside Housing Project, 6 p.m. at the library. And then on Tuesday night at 5 p.m., we're doing a running for office workshop. Anybody that's interested in running for council, we're going to have a couple of open seats this coming year, and I encourage you to come out and learn more about it.
Okay. Andy, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Park City Mayor Andy Bierman. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, coming up on Monday, Park City Reads presents an informational meeting about dyslexia. In the studio with details, I have the founder of Decoding Dyslexia, Phoebe Beecham, along with the executive director of Park City Reads, Lisa Ayton. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Lisa, we'll start with you and just give us the details, when, where, and...
Sure. We're really excited about the event. It's Monday night from 6 to 8 o'clock at the Blair Education Center, which is located in the Park City Hospital's Conference Center. And you can sign up by going to the Park City Reads website. It's a free event because PC Reads and the Hall Family Fund are sponsoring it together. It'll include a light dinner and then a panel presentation, which Phoebe will be moderating.
Okay. So who is this for?
We think it's ideal. We would love to have the room packed with educators and also parents, because it's really important that parents and educators are receiving the same information on this topic so that they can work well together.
Okay. And Phoebe, tell us a little bit about Decoding Dyslexia. What is it?
Decoding Dyslexia Utah is a Utah-based group. It originated as parents. It's kind of evolved into alliances with the Utah State Board of Ed and lots of educators. We are one organization in every state that originated in New Jersey. And Utah has been here for about almost 6 years. So.
Okay, and then how do you define dyslexia?
How do I define it? I use the IDA's definition, but it's basically, it's a processing disorder that makes it difficult to read, write, and spell. So, yeah.
Yeah. So how is it diagnosed, or can we diagnose it at this point? I think
we're
still
can.
We can?
Yep. You can diagnose it as early as age 5 and a half. And legally, you can get a diagnosis through a neuropsych. That's how you get that diagnosed. And you can also be identified, which is not, a legal diagnosis, but you can also be identified through screenings or through your school system. So, yeah.
Okay. Are there different sorts of dyslexic conditions?
That is open for debate. I think that it looks different in different students, absolutely. And some people have tried to define that. Generally speaking, there's kind of three areas that it affects. Phonemic awareness, rapid automatic naming, and these are, I can go into these things, or a double deficit, which is a combination of the two.
So does it exist in other languages besides English?
Absolutely, 100%. It's, there's no, occurs the same across male, female, all races, doesn't discriminate.
Yeah, is there one gender that more than the other that tend to?
Boys are diagnosed more frequently, but not because it occurs more frequently. It's just because they tend to act differently. They act up in class, and so they're get more attention for it. And girls tend to conceal their dyslexia. So. Yeah.
So what is it that parents should look for? I mean, it's 5 and a half. That's pretty young.
Right. You would look for a language delay, any problems. It's a speech-related disorder, so delayed speech, trouble with sequences and counting, trouble learning the letters of the alphabet. A really big one is family history. There's millions of undiagnosed adults, so they may not know what that is, but maybe a history of a trouble in school, or a dislike for school, or a dislike for reading, or a horrible speller in the family, immediate or close, you know.
Yeah, so does dyslexia affect more than just reading to learn, or it just spills over into these other subjects then?
Absolutely, it spills into, it affects every, you know, reading is a major life activity, and it spills over into every aspect of your life, every subject. Particularly, you're going to see it in reading in the beginning when you're in K through 3 and you are learning to read. And unfortunately, a lot of students don't get identified until third grade, but ideally you want to identify and remediate in kindergarten and first grade.
Yeah. And in some of the solutions, and I guess they're not solutions, but some of the things that we're using now to try and help people with dyslexia. I mean, I've heard of different colored lenses, different types of fonts. Are mm-hmm. those proving to be successful?
Those are more of an accommodation. They are not going to intervene and remediate dyslexia. You need like explicit structured literacy. Those things can be more like an accommodation. Like if a preference, you know, if they prefer a font that is dyslexic specific, or if they prefer a lens, but that will not help them learn to read.
It's a brain processing
correct.
Deal, right?
Yes, so, it's neurological in origin, correct,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So Lisa mentioned that you were going to have a panel. Can you talk to me a little bit about who's going to be on that and what they're going to be discussing? Or
Sure. Phoebe's actually moderated this panel at Westminster recently held a similar panel. But we have Ellen Bailey, who's the Utah State Board of Education Special Education Literacy Specialist, Jennifer Price, who's the president of Decoding Dyslexia, and Sue Dom, who She's is a principal a mm-hmm. at a school in Salt Lake, an elementary school principal, and Sarah Webke.
She's
with the state as well.
She's the literacy coordinator.
Okay, the literacy coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so we have it's a combination of people who are working directly within the Utah State Board of Education, as well as parents and a principal.
Okay.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and what is it that you hope people will walk away after Monday evening?
We want specifically parents to be empowered. We want teachers to be empowered. You know, frequently when we talk to educators, they're like, why didn't anyone tell me this? Why haven't I had access to this information? This was a joint project between us, and it's a great example of parents and educators and this Utah State School Board working together to do what's in the best interest for kids and reading. So they will be able to take this to their schools and say, this is what it looks like. This is how to remediate. This is what it looks like in your classroom. All take and use thing. This is, you know, all of these things that parents have just been without for so long.
Yeah.
And the process of making this handbook, it was I was on the committee that helped draft the handbook, and it took us a good 18 months of gathering information, speaking to people, having it reviewed by other outside.
Evaluating other states' handbooks.
Yeah. Well, too bad teachers don't get like extra credit for showing up, right?
They're getting a free meal, though.
Okay. There's the bonus.
Yes.
Do people need to RSVP or just show up?
We would prefer them to go online and RSVP so that we can have enough food and enough copies of the handbook for everybody.
Okay. What's that? address then?
It's if they go to pcreads.eventbrite.com.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
I think we're good. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Lisa and Phoebe,
thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks.